Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey guys, welcome to another fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin Kavanagh, and with me as always is Mr. Randy Van Dyke and David Edmondson. How are you two doing today?
So good, but so warm with these crazy summer days.
Yeah,
summer days.
You used to say, you come into the office and you'd be like, man, I can tuck my sack into my sock. And that was a perfect visual of how gross you are and how hot it is.
It's a perfect representation of how I feel this very moment.
I'll never forget that. That's dirty.
That sounds like something I would have said in my 20s, yes.
Dave, how are you doing?
Fantastic, and my sack is not only tucked in my socks, I'm stepping on it and it hurts. Justin, to you, how are you doing?
I'm good. I can't compete with either of those. I have no complaints. I'm wearing shorts and no sex stepping on, so I'm good.
Oh, you're doing it wrong. It's for pleasure.
Oh. Yeah.
You gotta wear those high-heeled shoes when you do it, too.
You're awful.
People pay extra for that, is all I'm saying.
So last week, we were talking a lot about Star Trek, like 40 minutes about Star Trek, but apparently it was all misinformation because we got scolded on Twitter about a lot of things that we were saying were wrong because we hadn't watched it in so long. But Randy was very passionate about Picard, the new Star Trek series, and then he actually convinced Dave.
I missed the call-outs. What were we called out about?
So much misinformation on the Picard talk or Trek talk or something like that. So we botched it.
I don't remember talking about anything like informative wise. Randy was very
tight-lipped. It's probably entirely me, and we're relying on my terrible memory from a show that I watched months ago. So.
Well, anyway, you inspired Mr. Evanson to go ahead and get the ball rolling on that show. He's made it, what, like 4 episodes, Dave?
Yes. Right after we hung up the phone, I decided, you know what? Let's fire up the old CBS All Access. I have it because I love Survivor and stuff like that. So I'm like, let's check this show out. Put it on, binged through 4 episodes, realized, yeah, this show's probably not for me. Went to Wikipedia, read the rest of the series, and once I got to the end, I'm like, I would have kicked my television. So we're going to drop a spoiler warning here because I've already ruined it for Justin when we talked earlier. So this is your spoiler warning for Picard if you haven't seen it. If you haven't seen it, you know what? I urge you to listen to it. It is a major spoiler, but it may shade your desire to watch the show. So give me 3, 2, come back in like 4 minutes, okay? Don't leave. Just come back in 4 minutes. Mute us or something. Skip ahead.
Or
all right,
3, 2, 1,
go. So, Randy, does the end where Picard dies play out better than it read on a Wikipedia page?
It does play out a little bit better because you know the entire series that he's going to die. You find out in the first or second episode that he's got this terminal thing going on. And I think that's why it's so important to him that he goes on this mission to find Data's surviving daughter.
Yeah, and I think the scene where he finds out he has the terminal disease was probably one of my favorite scenes in the whole show, where he's just hanging with this doctor, and you know, the doctor's got to clear him for Starfleet and stuff like that. And you know, basically, he's like, yeah, you're gonna die. So I was in on that. It's just I'm not a huge Allison Pill fan. For you people who watch Newsroom, she was the kind of like the main character, like the intern that was dating the producer guy. I know I'm very good with names at this moment. But she had red hair in the second season because she went to Africa and bad things happened.
Yeah, that was dicey.
And so I'm already not a huge fan of her. She was you know, the doctor who worked on you know, not Data's, the synths as they called them. I don't begrudge anyone who likes it. I know people like Discovery and stuff like that, and that wasn't, you know, really for me either. I wouldn't say I disliked what I watched. I was just, it was just kind of, but so Randy, when they put him in the golem, And it's yeah, exactly. It's and it's like Gollum. A different kind of Gollum. And it's but doesn't look like Picard. So are you under the impression that they're just going to create like a Picard like vessel for him in the next season, and he'll look like Patrick Stewart again, or do you think we'll have Picard season two without Patrick Stewart?
Well, first of all, what's a Gollum? I don't even remember that from the series.
That's the thing that
it's like they a robot. No, it's like a yeah. it's like a thing that moves like a yeah. like in World of Warcraft. That's a giant blast lands or wherever they were. Or,
one of those, yeah, one of those yeah. level 50 areas.
Yeah, it's like a statue brought to life kind of thing.
Yeah. So, do you think yeah. that they will bring him back as not a Gollum, and like Patrick Stewart will return, or
at the very end of the series, it's Patrick Stewart body with you know synth. He's a synth at the end, so he's there. Yeah. If my memory, I mean my memory is shit. I didn't even think anybody listened to this show, much less called us out on anything on Twitter. Was it Twitter?
Dave told me that he was like a naked flesh bot with a yeah. clear face.
Well, there's a flesh coming from somebody who read the entire thing on Wikipedia and didn't watch it. I mean, between somebody who hasn't seen it and somebody that can't remember it, all we need is somebody that can't hear it, and we'll have the trifecta going on here.
Well, that's why I was asking if he became himself at the end. So he does become himself. He
becomes himself. Yeah, I mean, again, apparently my memory is pretty terrible on this series, and I should rewatch it. But I remember him sitting there as Patrick Stewart as a synth at the end of the series.
Shit.
All right, so not this thing that he transfers consciousness to?
Maybe you see that for a split second, but yeah.
Oh, okay. You gotta keep reading, Dave.
Oh.
By the way, Allison Pill on The Newsroom, she played Maggie. And she used to date Don, and then she left Don and then started dating Jim.
And I like that because then Don got to date Sloan. And
yeah, Don was the best character on the show. I liked him a lot.
They were a good couple.
Anyway.
So, yeah, whatever that image is that I was looking at there. I mean, it's just like if you watch Westworld. I mean, the whole intro for the entire, every season of the show is like these white sinuous beings being created, you know, before they have the fleshy bits put over them to look real. You know, you might see a few seconds here or there of somebody that looks like that in the show, but for the most part, they look human. I'm going to draw the similarity to Picard in that you might have seen him like that for a second. I don't even remember it, to be honest. I just remember him looking like himself by the end of it.
Well, it's a major part of it, the Wikipedia page.
My memory, well, I mean, obviously the person that wrote it, it must have made a very big impression on them. So,
well, on the flip side of that, you were challenged to watch The Social Network on the last episode.
Which I did. And I was reminded by the fact that it is pretty fucking flawless. So you guys are definitely on point there, having that as one of your top movies in the last 10 years. I would totally agree with that. It was so good. But it's one of those things that's just kind of like sad and doesn't bear a lot of repeat watching, which is probably why I didn't feel motivated to watch it again after seeing it in the theater.
Right. And that is always interesting, too, when a movie is good, and it might even be great, and once is enough.
That right. Is, I said that when we talked about Logan too. It's like, I love this movie so much, but it takes a lot out of me. And it's like, I can't watch that more than once every 5 years. You right. know?
It's draining.
Yeah.
I know. I totally get it.
Sad to watch your heroes die. Yeah. Well, I'm excited that you love The Social Network as much as we do. And we were kind of texting back and forth. Have you seen Steve Jobs?
I haven't yet. No, that's next on my list because you were really talking that up too.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one a lot. It's so like for a movie where not a lot happens, it's very fast paced. Yeah. It's really weird because it's moments before each of these big product reveals. And so the clock is basically ticking and it's hit the fan and they got to try and find a way to make it work for each reveal. And it's just always this. You're just biting your nails, and it's edge of the seat kind of drama. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it's like, got to open the house in 10 minutes. Go open the house in 10 minutes. What happens if we don't open the house in 10 minutes?
And then meanwhile, everyone's like pulling on Steve Jobs, like, hey, I need you for 5 seconds. Hey, I need you. Can we talk about this? Can we talk about that? So you just, you know, like when you're trying to make one of your movies and every person on set needs to borrow you for a second. And you're just like, well, everyone just calm the fuck down. It's going to be okay. We got this. Relax.
And then he's like an unflinching, like taskmaster. Yeah. You know, wants to make sure everything's fine and everything's perfect and stuff like that. So it's real good. And it's enough time has passed to where you no longer watch it wondering, like, what would have been if Fincher had directed it instead of Danny Boyle? Because Danny Boyle's a great director on his own. But, you know, Fassbender is great as Steve Jobs. Don't watch the Ashton Kutcher movie called Just Jobs. Watch Steve Jobs with Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, Magneto. Look for Magneto.
Yes.
How close do those come out together? Was that another one of those, like, Deep Impact and Armageddon situations?
Yeah. No, there was a couple years in between them. Jobs with Kushner came out, like, I'd say, like, 3 years before.
Man, I really like Deep Impact. We talk about that movie every couple of episodes, and it's so funny because it's actually really good. Aside from, like, everyone giving up their seat, like, the whole movie, they're worried about survival, and then when push comes to shove, they're like, yeah, well, fuck it, I'm just going to die and get hit by this big rock. And it's so funny how that works, but I enjoy the shit out of that movie. It's so funny. It and it's got movie. Dave's girlfriend in it.
It does have Lilo Sobieski in it, yes.
Oh, that's great.
David's not girlfriend. Watch Steve Jobs, and then after you can watch Molly's Game, which was Aaron Sorkin writing and directing, and then you realize sometimes people should just write.
Oh. Wait. It's what you cut out? What was the movie?
Molly's Game. Oh, that was he wrote and directed it. It's about poker and stuff like that, but it's got a great cast. It's got Idris Elba, it's got Jessica Chastain and stuff like that. It's just you can write this shit, but you can't shoot this shit.
Why would anybody make a poker movie after Rounders when that's like the greatest card movie ever made?
Yeah, it's more about the game.
After Empire Strikes Back,
right?
People got their own
dollars themselves.
I am glad you brought up Empire Strikes Back, Randy. we were playing Halo last night, and I had kind of an off the wall thought. If you could quantify what makes Star Wars great, all right, so things that are important to Star Wars. So feel free to tell me if I'm right or wrong, Randy. So lightsaber battles are important for a great Star Wars movie, right? I'm not trying to. Let me preface this, Randy. I'm not trying to trap you. There's no trap involved.
No, I'm going to say no. It's not. It's not necessary. Rogue One is amazing. There's not a single lightsaber battle. A lightsaber I would say is wielded.
The best part of that movie is a lightsaber battle.
Well, it has a lightsaber, but it's not two lightsabers battling. It is a lightsaber against blaster fire. Okay.
There's a presence of a laser sword. Dave, that's going in Dave's column.
The presence of a laser sword, yes, I will agree on that column.
All right. Let me preface this whole thing because I don't want you I feel like you're thinking I'm gonna try to trap you. So right, I am trying to quantify why episode 3 is a great Star Wars film. And why it should not be lauded in the way it is. Yes, it has some terrible performances. Yes, there are some wooden caricatures of characters. But when I think Star Wars, there's several things I think. First of all, there is the overall mythology of Star Wars. And episode 3 is a pivotal cog in that mythology, showing us the transformation from Anakin to Darth Vader. You know, as I watched it the other day, I was... Because it's always been like, oh, Anakin's shift is too fast. And I'm watching Mace Windu be a total fuck to him. And I'm like, you know what? Even Mace Windu's exact words to him after he comes to him and tells him, I found out the Chancellor is the evil Sith we've been looking for the whole time. Mace Windu looks him in the eyes and says, if what you say is true, restored my faith in you, my trust you have, or some bullshit like that. And I'm like, these Jedi motherfuckers, they've just been a dick to him this whole time. All he wants to do is get married to his sweet wife and have his sweet babies, and they won't let him because it's against the rules.
I don't think he's mature enough to be a Jedi because that's like a test. Yeah. I mean, like, if your parents told you, like, hey, you've been a fucker for the last couple of days, and I'm kind of disappointed in you, and if you can go like 5 minutes without being a fucker, then maybe you will have restored my faith in my child. You're not going to go into the next room and just murder a bunch of kids and cut off someone's hand. But the
Jedi are not only not his parents, they took him from his parents and forbade him from communicating with his mom.
He wanted to go.
Saved it. Yes, but he could have saved his mother if the Jedi hadn't interfered with him.
Yeah.
Regardless,
yeah, could he have, though, if he didn't have the Jedi training, would he as a, you know, a teenage weakling on Tatooine slave moisture farmer, whatever he would have been at that point in time, would even have been able to stave off an attack of sand people?
No,
probably. I don't know. Well, by the time episode 2 rolls around, he would be. By the time it's episode 2, he's 19. He's not a 10-year-old boy anymore.
Well, no, I know. I realize he's not Jedi trained or anything. I mean,
he's able to pod race, you know, so obviously he has some kind of skills. But regardless,
what are you saying? He's going to race his mom, like, for pink slips? Race the sand people for pink slips on his mom? So anyway, you beat me in a pod race, you can have my mom. If you don't, then I get your whole village.
And then I get you your mom.
why can't he be a Jedi Master? Is there, like, you know, is there, like, a limit to how many robes they have? Like, he can't, probably. Like, they can't make him a Jedi Master because they think that... Okay, they accuse him of being too close. They accuse him of being too close to the Chancellor, and that's why they don't trust him. And then they ask him to spy on him, and days later he comes back. He's like, "Fuck, you guys were right. He is the bad guy." And they're like, "Go fuck yourself. Go sit in the council chambers and wait for me to get back."
He's not a master. That's basically what Smith says. He hasn't learned enough yet. He is not a master of the craft. He has a lot of learning to do.
Okay, Windu took three other masters with them, and they all went out like bitches.
Yeah, they went out like super bitches. All right, so let me ask you this. Is this taking into account only what we see in the movies, or do we get the seven seasons of rich history created by the Clone Wars animated series?
Well, right. I think it works both ways. I think that it stands on its own, but if you are a fan of the supplemental material, you know, I think that the movie should stand alone as a movie, but you can have your enjoyment increased or elevated if you're a fan of the supplemental material, like the expanded universe, like the TV shows, like the comics, like the games and stuff like that. So I would say for someone like us who have seen all of these things, it should absolutely come into account.
Because I'm going to say that actually enhances it for me. Because, yeah, I had a little bit of a hard time kind of tracking his descent, you know, into becoming Sith. I got it, and it was okay. It wasn't enough to really bother me, but it did seem he went from zero to child murdering very quickly. But it's all of us. I read a lot of the old expanded universe novels that took place around that time period, which I think are legends and aren't canon anymore. But considering the seven seasons of Clone Wars as well, they do such a good job of kind of allowing us glimpses into the dark side of Anakin throughout that series and into some of the political stuff going on that would push him in that direction supplementally on top of what you see in the movies, that for me really helps make it kind of clear. Like, okay, I totally get it now. Right. It's
the
still
only thing I don't believe about Anakin's descent is his betrayal of Padme. You know. Did I rub that out there?
No. I heard you. The betrayal of Padme. I don't know if you've ever been in this position in your life.
Probably not.
You're a very passionate individual. I can imagine you having been in this position. Now, not saying you're not passionate, David, but imagine this. You love somebody with every fiber of your being, and you feel that they have cheated you in some way. Not necessarily cheated on you, but they have betrayed you, gone behind your back. You think... You, as Anakin, think that she's conspiring with Obi-Wan, who is already on your last nerve. And if you think, and now she's siding with him, oh, bitch, gonna die. You know, that's where I kind of see that little snap in him. Because he's, you know, he's very, like, rushed to judgment. He's very, like, hard on his sleeve, kind of. He is just going to snap and, you know, reach out and choke her. Now, do I believe he would have killed her? No. I think he would have come to his senses, but
what has Obi-Wan done to deserve that, though?
Yeah, he never really. I don't remember them having a specific falling out in the moments leading up to Anakin's fall.
Their last conversation is him apologizing for not being a good enough master, and that he has no doubt that Anakin will be a much greater Jedi than he will. Like they leave on like amazing terms, like before he goes to Utapau.
Okay.
Why have we switched roles here?
In the movie, yes.
Because it's stupid. That's why.
In the movie, yes, and that makes sense. I'm trying to remember because it's been a while since I've watched episode 3. And I'm terrible.
Into a robot.
I'm really good at misremembering science fiction. So
it's a golem that he turns into.
Yeah. All right. Now, what does Padme say to Anakin once they reach Mustafar? Like, she's had a conversation with Obi-Wan at this point, and Obi-Wan told her about the kids and everything and what he witnessed, and that's what kind of like sparks her to like go talk to him, right? So, don't you think that Anakin suspects that the reason why she's even doing this is because Obi-Wan kind of ratted him out?
Yeah, he says, "You trying to turn her against me?"
Well, yeah,
you have done it yourself.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that dialogue because I pilfered those two lines in a recent project of mine, but because I love it so much. Because
episode 3 is amazing.
Yeah. Well, no, I do love me some episode so good. 3.
Okay, so taking the tangent, we talked about lightsaber battles. You know, I would think I count lightsaber battles as being important. I think episode 3 has some of the best lightsaber battles of the saga. You know, space battles. Are space battles an important component to Star Wars?
Yes.
The opening episode 3 space battle is the best in the series.
There you go. So it's got great that. You know,
great just, that.
Great that. Great space battle. I mean, it's got the drums. It's got the music. It's got Obi-Wan using clones as disposable armor. It's like the clones are doing their job. They're doing their jobs. All right, you know, just action, you know, overall. If you don't want to count lightsaber action, you know, you can just count just, you know, the thrilling action of a film, you know. And I think that history has been kind to the prequels just in terms of the meat. Like, my kids are watching it with me, and my older son Luke must have said like 10 times, just say he's got the high ground. He's got the high grounds. I just think that episode 3 is great, and people should appreciate it more.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't think it's the best.
You can tell me that episode 3 is great. It's the second best, Justin. It's not the best. Don't be glib.
I don't know, man. I do Empire, then I do Jedi, then I do Rogue One, then Episode 3. And sometimes Rogue One is before Jedi, but in most cases, it is Empire, Jedi, Rogue One, then Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, that's not a terrible thing. Those are my top 4. I just have a slightly different list. Mine is Empire, Revenge of the Sith, Return of the Jedi, and then Rogue One. So we have the same top 4, just go in a different order.
I'm actually going to agree with David on this one and say that is exactly my top 4 in the same order as well. Okay. So, yeah.
Suck it, Cavender.
Yeah, shenanigans. Yeah.
And it's interesting when you sit there and try to quantify what makes a Star Wars movie good, because I'd never really thought about that before until we brought it up right now. But I don't know. I think it's the sum of its parts. Everything about Star Wars makes it good.
Right.
We're still flying half a ship.
Right. That's what's cool about Rogue One, though, is like it was completely different than those other ones. It had familiarities, but it was a much like... it was a darker, a meaner, and dirtier Star Wars movie than we were used to. I really dug that. Like the whole market scene, even the very beginning, when we get to meet Cassian and how he doesn't even hesitate to just murder that guy because he's like freaking out.
I think it's probably the first Star Wars movie made for adults.
Yeah,
I mean, Rogue One was made for teens and adults.
It's also the first one without a crawl, so you know going into it that. This is going to be different. It's going to be a different Star Wars experience. But I know a lot, like
I think that if you were to ask kids, I bet Rogue One ranks lower on their list, and I think adults it ranks higher.
Yeah.
And like, I think
like it my wife thought Rogue One was boring.
Interesting. Because since you mentioned it's like a more grown-up, more adult Star Wars movie, I think it appeals to us who grew up with Star Wars. You know, especially the original trilogy, the era that it takes place in. So it feels like a natural, darker, more realistic progression, you know? So it really appeals to the older, old school fans.
Right. So I think when I was a kid,
fans.
Right. When I was a kid, I remember liking Return of the Jedi most. And I probably would have done, Jedi,
then A New Hope, and then Empire. And then when I became a teenager, then I just kind of, my priorities shifted a little bit. And I appreciated Empire for what it was.
I totally agree.
Yeah, as a kid, once they got off Hoth, you're like, I'm checking out. They're going to Dagobah, Cloud City, and I'm not here for it.
Yeah, I was all about the Hoth battle, and then, Empire was a snooze fest for me when I was a kid. But, man, I worshipped at the altar of the Ewoks, dude. I loved the Ewoks. I loved Return of the Jedi. It was nonstop action. Childhood favorite movie, hands down. Yeah. But it's weird how your tastes change as you get older.
Yeah.
I'm just always surprised at how much hate Return of the Jedi gets. Just like I'm always amazed at how much hate The Last Crusade gets. I'm not trying to start this argument again, Ray. Don't worry. This isn't that.
There's no argument.
But I was just shocked. I was just shocked to hear that people like disliked it. I'm like, are you out of your mind? I mean, even if you like Raiders better, Last Crusade is still an incredible film. But
I've never heard this argument, though. I've never heard people outright dislike Last Crusade. That's just insane to me.
Yeah, go on the internet. Have you been on the internet? Have you heard about it?
My favorite argument ever was when we were at Star Wars Celebration, and our buddy Vaughn came up to us, and they're like, who would win a fight between the Ewoks and the Stormtroopers? And we're like, it already happened? And the Ewoks?
There was a 2.5-hour film about it?
Historical documents.
I know that was prior to alternate facts.
I think I think you sold it wrong. I believe his exact words were, "Can you settle a debate I've been having with my friend for years?" I'm pretty sure that's how he started.
Yeah, like, who would win a fight?
Are you guys not familiar with Return of the Jedi?
Apparently, it ranks so low on people's movie list that they don't even acknowledge its existence.
Man, how can you hate the Ewoks, man? They're so great.
And we were so drunk during that conversation, too. Made it even better.
Oh, yeah, with all the booze that we snuck.
Oh, I don't think we were drunk yet. I think that's what drove us to drink.
Oh, I don't know. I was pretty loaded.
And for the record, for anybody listening, we did not sneak booze into the show. We drank across the street and then walked over intoxicated.
I have
evidence. I don't know. I remember drinking it there.
The giant red drink. That was potent. It was like fire water. It was great.
Come on, did you put any crystal light in this one, Randy?
It's red, isn't it?
It's more pink.
Oh, shit. All the photos, I have like the reddest teeth, too. I'm smiling the whole time and laughing. You can hear my laugh in the photographs. It's so great. And then my teeth are just so red. It's amazing.
That's why it's such a magical memory.
I know. Speaking of magical memories, did you guys get a chance to check out the Bill and Ted Face the Music trailer that came out today?
I did, and I thought it was amazing. I loved seeing Death returning in there. That was super cool. And it was cool just to see that they, after all this time, they haven't changed. That was like the crux of the trailer is nothing has changed, and that's the problem.
Yep, same mannerisms and everything. That's great.
Yeah,
the whole like putting their hand on the chest and their arm out. Yeah, when they went saw Prison Bill and Ted.
Yeah, like, it's kind of dark, but that's cool. Yeah. And William Sadler, is Death. He has returned. That's great.
Yeah,
he was awesome. A bad guy in Die Hard 2.
I'm hoping it's like when they mess with time, like it's kind of like they make all these alternate realities and they like end up in like all these different pocket universes.
Right, and they got to fix it all.
Yeah, and their song can be about that.
Wouldn't it be great if they interact with their younger selves at some point, too? I mean, we've already seen it in that Walmart commercial.
With the younger Bill and older Bill. 69.
I know, I was just thinking that. How timeless is that joke? It's like any teenage boy, you ask them to pick a number. That's probably the one they're going to come up with.
Well, and that's great, too, because they revisit that scene later on. I think it's in the statement in the first movie. So it's like them watching themselves, and then imagine, here we are 30 years later, them watching themselves as 30 years older. That could be fucking cool. That could be a really, really neat dynamic to play with that, it was kind of intimated at a little bit with Back to the Future 2. But I mean, here's our opportunity to go one step deeper into this kind of weird time traveling movie paradox with their younger selves that they can really get into.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I think there's something to be said about friendships that you've had your entire life to where when you get together with that person, you just immediately regress back to when you were kids. I feel like when the three of us hang out, we're automatically teleported back to our early 20s selves, and it's dangerous.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you ever hung out with a buddy that you know, maybe you knew when you were growing up, and then you saw him again in college, and then or later as an adult, you just start laughing about the dumbest shit, and you just immediately become a child again. So I think all of us have that ability to just teleport back in time to our younger selves, and that's pretty cool. And I think it'll be very, very relatable in that
sense. Yeah, for sure. I think it was Chung's, one of my friend's last birthdays, Chung, who I've known almost my whole life. We went to elementary school and junior high, and we ended up hanging out with two other people that we all went to elementary school, junior high, and high school with. And we ended up back at my place going through like all my old yearbooks and just reminiscing and telling all the dumb jokes we told when we were kids. And my wife went to high school with us, so she was able to join in for some of the reindeer games. And it's amazing how you can be transported back just with simple memories.
Yeah. Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
I'm excited, man.
I've burned too many bridges. I don't keep friends longer than like 10 years.
Except for you guys. I was gonna say we're almost at like 20 now. That's
no, crazy. I know. I'm teasing, but sadly I don't really talk to anybody that I went to school with, like elementary school or high school or anything like that. It's like once I left, like I have Disney friends, which is like the immediate post high school era, but it's like after I left school, I just kind of made new friends and never went back.
You found a better class of people.
Yeah. Not necessarily better. It's just like I guess as I progressed, you know, my friendships did too.
Do you know? And maybe you're not even allowed to even answer this, but I remember when there was a sort of a secret club that former cast members of Disney could join to keep in contact with one another. Does that still exist?
Well, it might, but I'm not privy to it. I've been disenfranchised from it. No, there was a thing, and it was a Facebook group back in the beginning days of Facebook, like, you know, way back when. It has gone completely inactive. And in fact, I think even before then, it was like some Yahoo group, you know, those old Yahoo groups that would send like,
yeah, I thought it was pre-Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think it was probably pre-Facebook. It was like post-MySpace. Yeah. It was post-MySpace, but pre-Facebook. It was right in that weird gray area in between.
Friendster.
Yeah. That was a thing for a while, but it's gone. But now, I mean, specifically there's groupings all over social media. It's specifically on Facebook. There's already a bunch of like former cast member groups, current cast member groups. Somehow I got invited to a current cast member group, and it's all people just wanting to trade shifts and stuff like that. I'm like, why am I here? I don't need to see this.
You just are picking up shifts.
I know.
I'm funny with that. I guess get someone fired.
Yeah, it's like, hey,
I'll cover for you.
My shift on Star Tours. I'm like, I'm not trained, but I'll take it. I'll hit the red button.
It's just the green button, right?
Yeah, doesn't
give them the glasses. Yeah, give them the glasses. Make sure all the green lights light up. The seatbelts are on. Make a corny "May the Force be with you" joke, and then you hit the red button.
Yeah, there you go. It's simple as that, right?
I wanted to do the Jungle Cruise, like sort of treat it as like an open mic kind of thing, and just have a good time. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that currently, well, I mean, when the parks are open, do Jungle Cruise and have done Jungle Cruise in the past, and they're generally very extroverted, like actor types, you know, mm-hmm. that like to do that kind of thing. But it always seemed like such a fun job to do, you know.
And that's a real fraternity because I'm friends with someone who was a captain for years, and now he does video production, but you know. He hangs out with, they have like meetups for like, you know, past and current, you know, captains for the Jungle Cruise. So, he's like, I got to go to this Jungle Cruise thing. And I'm like, what, are you going to go to Disneyland? He's like, oh, no, we all meet up and stuff like that. I'm like,
man. All right. I wonder if you got to pass some sort of test, like how much does a hippopotamus weigh?
Well, what it comes down to is any kind of position where you have to do a spiel, whether it is, for example, like a, especially tour guides, there's heavy conditioning and brainwashing that goes into becoming a Disney tour guide. But even any of the attractions where you have to do a big long spiel yourself, especially one like Jungle Cruise, where you can kind of change it up a little bit, you have to be very mindful of your material that you're using, that kind of thing. But they test you. It's like basically you have to do it in front of the right audience before they'll give you the opportunity to do it in front of guests.
Wow. Yeah, because you don't want people travel from all over the world, and if you're the asshole that ruins their experience, then you're done. You'll never work in the town again.
They're going to go on this ride one time in their whole life, and it better be perfect.
Yeah. Look it up.
I can deal with not funny and just like somebody that's kind of wooden, but I mean, if you get somebody that's just belligerent and just insulting people in the butt, then it just becomes a very uncomfortable 20-minute boat ride.
Yeah, I like the one where it sounds like they hate their job. Those ones are always fun.
Yeah,
and they like half-ass, like they don't shoot the gun anymore, but they'd be like, "Oh, bang, bang, bang,"
and every animal can grow to the same length and weigh the same amount. That's always fun too.
Or like the ones like you don't do that every day, unless you're me, over and over.
Yeah, that's good shit.
I'm a little sad that it looks like the end of Bill and Ted's 2 didn't happen. I really like the end of Bill and Ted's, where it's got like the montage of like Bill and Ted play the moon and stuff like that. You know, I guess that didn't happen, unless maybe it happened much later than we're led to believe in the Bill and Ted Bogus Journey movie. Yeah, it's a fun ending. Hopefully Station's in this one. Station.
I think we can still keep that ending intact if they steal the song from whatever within their time period, whenever it is that they create it, and then go back and give it to their younger selves so that they don't end up in this weird middle-aged thing that they found themselves in at the beginning of this movie.
Right, it reset itself.
Yeah, yeah. I think that could be a compelling story.
I was also surprised that we didn't see the kids, you know, because, you know, right. And maybe it was on purpose, because there's, you know, a big campaign out there that people are worried that they're just turning this into like Bill and Ted's Daughters type thing, you know, because that's kind of like the thing to do in movies right now. And, you know, which would be fine. You know, that's their choice and stuff like that. But I think most of us want to see Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan. So maybe that was their way of showing like, nope, this is a Bill and Ted movie.
Right.
Not a Bill and Ted's Daughters movie.
And it's actually still set to come out on August 21st, 2020.
Perfect.
Which is crazy to think about.
I'll be there.
Sounds like theaters are going to be open.
Yeah.
At AMC.
Yeah, we can jump right into that, actually. You know, August is only 2 months away. And we have, what is it, Cinemark, right? Cinemark's going to be opening the doors on Friday, June 19th. Employees are required to wear masks, while guests are encouraged, but not required to wear masks. How do you guys feel about that? You feel safe going to a Cinemark theater?
I mean, Randy.
Okay, I was going to say, for me, I would say not right away. When they're opening on the 19th, that's just, you know, like a week and a half from now. I'm going to probably wait out the month of June before going, maybe look at maybe July. And the reason is, you know, there's so much going on in the world right now. Specifically, you know, we don't generally get political on the show, but there's a lot of protesting going on in the world, not just our country, but all over. And it is large amounts of people shoulder to shoulder, definitely not practicing social distancing. And I'm not saying anything one way or the other about protests. I'm just saying that there's a whole lot of people that could be spreading a whole lot of coronavirus. So I'm going to wait for the second wave that's inevitably going to happen, assuming it is as you know, as passable as everybody says it is, as easy it is to pass on to people. So I'm assuming there's going to be a second wave, and I'm going to wait it out before going anywhere like a movie theater anytime soon.
You got your cream corn and your ramen. You're ready to ride out the apocalypse.
Yeah. I totally am. I mean, I have asthma, so you know, the last thing I need is any kind of thing that's going to attack my lungs. So yeah, fuck that. I'm staying home for at least another month.
I'm a proud AMC Plus member, A Plus member, whatever it is.
You're so proud. You don't even know what the fuck it's called.
It's A-list. It's Stubbs A-list. And so they're not coming until July. And, you know, they've been pretty forthcoming about, you know, their financial woes. You know, they've lost $2.4 billion because of this closure. You know, they've been having press releases saying like, hey, if you like going to the movies at AMC, you need to go to the movies at AMC as soon as you can. But you know, all plans look like it's going to be, you know, depending on the state you live in or the theater chain you're going to go to, it's going to be between 25% and 50% full. I think most people are going to be encouraged to wear masks as they enter and exit, as they come in contact with people. And then once you're in the theater, you know, it's your own personal preference to wear it or not to wear it. I think that'll give me a couple weeks. We'll get to see what Cinemark does. Plus, there's nothing out, nothing till July we want to see. You know, that's when Tenet comes out. That's when Mulan comes out. You know, we mentioned August is when Bill and Ted's going to come out. So there are a lot of summer movies that did not move super far into the future that we can actually enjoy. So I'm itching to go back to the movies, but I you know, I'll be there day one.
I have two questions for you, Dave.
Sure.
One, was your payment plan sort of suspended with AMC while this yes. whole thing was going down?
Yeah, they okay. suspended everyone's accounts.
Now, when it comes to opening back up again, are you someone that they're making money off of because you don't necessarily buy a lot of concession? You just kind of go to the movies?
No, I buy a lot of concessions.
Do you?
I mean, every time I go, I at least get a soda. You know, I am at a place in my life where I can afford overpriced concessions. Because that's where the movie theaters really make their money.
So that's how you support your theaters, by right. buying the $20 soda. And interesting, the soda is more than the popcorn. I always found that fascinating.
Well, one of the cool things about being a Stubbs A-plus member, A-list member, is that you pay for the medium and they give you the large.
Oh, okay.
Free upgrades. And you get your rewards points. So yeah.
You get a liter of cola.
Yeah. So, no, yeah, so... I understand AMC is a huge, mega, multi-billion-dollar corporation. It sounds silly to say you're supporting them in that way, but I'm the type of person who is going to go to as many movies as I can. You know, to where I'm not the person who's going to see like one movie every like 3 months to where they're making money off the subscription for me. They're making money off me off of, you know, concessions because
right.
you know, a lot of times I'll take my kids and, you know, my kids have been conditioned to where they can't go without a soda and popcorn, and you know, I'm not going to share a soda with those two miscreants, so I got to get my own soda.
No, I get it. Me and Alex, when we go, our concession bills is usually upwards of $30. We'll each get a soda. I'll get a soda. She'll get a Slurpee. We'll get a large popcorn. She'll get a candy of sorts. Maybe even a coffee if they sell it. So like, we look like real jacks when we leave the counter with all of our stuff. It's so stupid. And but it's part of our theater going experience.
Yeah,
that's what helps us enjoy the movie, is having all this fun and festive stuff. It's like when you go to a ball game, you're going to get a hot dog. You're going to get that stupid red whip thing. You're going to get, you know, peanuts or whatever. Like, that's just part of the experience. You'll get the little helmet with the ice cream. It's like shit that you wouldn't even normally eat, but because you're at a ball game, you have to do it.
Now they put nachos in that helmet, Justin.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's just like if you go to a fair, it's like all that fair food. It's like normally shit you wouldn't eat, but it's like you're there, you're going to eat it. You know,
right.
Same thing with any events like this. And over the last 5 years, I've got really spoiled because I liked going to the movie theaters that have like the dine-in experiences, or you could order alcohol that they'll come deliver to your seat or whatever. So I'll get a couple drinks, we'll get an appetizer, we'll get some dinner, we're sitting there, we're like eating over, watching a movie, getting a little liquored up. And that shit ain't cheap by any stretch.
It's not. We saw the new Jurassic Park movie that way. And one of the things that I found fascinating was the interruption of the service. Like, it's coming and you're trying to watch, and then they're putting something on a tray for you, and then they got to come and give you your bill for you to sign. Maybe this theater was different, but that's how ours worked throughout. It was almost like when you go to a comedy club at the beginning of the show, you order your drinks, but by the end of the show, you have to close out, basically.
Yeah, and it works the same way here, and that's always really frustrating, is because you're given this bill to close out, like a document you literally have to sign because you're probably using a credit card for it, right?
So, right. Meanwhile, it's like, the climax of the movie. King Kong's at the top of the building.
And it's dark as hell, and I can't see the shit, so I'm going to have to sit there and wait through the credits, you know, so I can either turn on my phone to use my phone screen to see, or, you know, wait for a bright scene or something like that. I kind of figured, I think I cracked the code on this one. So the trick is to get there a half an hour early. Now, back in the old days when we didn't have all the reserved seating and that kind of stuff that you can get in today's modern movie-going era, I always got there half an hour early just so I could get a decent seat. And then, God forbid, like midnight screenings of Star Wars back in the day for the prequels, we would get there 12 hours early just to be up towards the front of the line to get a half-decent seat because it was something we were super passionate about. And that was just what you did back then. Now you have the luxury of just like going on an app, ordering tickets, and rolling in whenever you damn well feel like it. But anyway, so the key is still to get there half an hour early, but get all your ordering and close out your bill ahead of time. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to get a couple drinks, we're going to get some food, and then go ahead and give me the bill right away so that it doesn't interrupt our movie going experience. So we are sitting there with the food, having signed off on it and everything, and sent them on their merry way by the time the credits roll, you know, or not by the time the trailers roll at the beginning. So that's kind of the way to get around that.
Sure. And that's very nice of you, but the people behind me aren't going to do that. And the people to the left and to the right of me aren't going to do that. So sure, it's going to be obnoxious.
But let me say about cracking the code, Randy. I've cracked the code. Remember, I'm an AMC Stubbs A List Plus member.
Plus check.
So I love them because, you know, in my area, they're all the recliner seats and they're all reserved seating, and it's the most amazing thing ever. And my butt is definitely spoiled. So I have learned that AMC always has between 22 and 23, no less than 22 minutes, no more than 23 minutes of commercials and AMC bumpers. So the AMC is 13 minutes from my house. So I will leave if the showtime is 10 a.m. or 10 o'clock. I will leave my house at 10:05 because I know that'll give me just enough time to drive there, to park, to go to the bathroom there, get concessions, and get to my seat as the AMC bumper comes up saying, like, let's watch these movies and more, and blah, 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 be an A-plus Stubbs member, blah, 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 and then movie starts.
All right, I'm going to tell you this right now. People like you just fucking annoy the shit out of me. And here's why. No, you didn't ruin the movie for me, but let's say you've got the block of seats right next to me, and like the trailers are ending, the movie's about to start, and I'm thinking, shit, yeah, I got empty seats next to me. I can spread out. I can relax. I can take up the whole
fatty armor. Rolls up there.
And then all of a sudden you got, excuse me, coming through, you know, with the whole family. Yeah. Like right as the movie is starting, I'm like, oh my fucking
but it's,
God.
It's okay, Randy. We're in the reserved seating, the recliner seats. You got booty for days. Yeah,
I know. I got all the space and all the armors. But I just don't like sitting next to people. I'm just kind of antisocial.
So you know? Well, you can reserve your seats. So just pick somewhere else.
No. Well, how do I know that, you know, I'll get these great seats and then all of a sudden you'll get the seats after me and they'll like, oh, the theater's empty, but I really want these seats. Well, these two next to me are already taken, but this is like the prime spot, so I'm going to take these.
You got
to
do theater math, Randy. If you see a row of seats are taken and there's like three seats left, you leave that one seat bumper and then you go to the seats over. No one's going to want that one seat, Randy. Profit.
But again,
and then you put your lady friend where someone else might sit. You sit in the one you know no one's going to sit.
Right, exactly. No, because she's even less social than I am. So I'll make sure that if there's an empty seat that she gets the, you know, next to us that she gets it. But you know, it's just like that same thing where it's chivalrous if you're on the sidewalk walking like arm in arm, you're on the street side. So if a car jumped the curb, that you would be the one to
die. You're the one
that dies. Yeah. It's the same principle in the movie theater.
Who's going to be the next time the car jumps the curb? If you get murdered this time, what if it happens again?
Well, then it's going to be the next poor sap.
That's rotten luck.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's obviously not that big of an issue, and I'm just giving you a hard time. I'm just teasing. No. But yeah, that's still one of the reasons why I like to get there early. And that same sense of liking to get there early means I try to order my tickets as soon as possible. So I'll have a blank slate. It'll be like the theater map will be empty. I'll be, you know, you guys will be like later on down the road, like, okay, these seats are already taken. It's because I've already been there and I've already taken those seats.
You're going to be a Stubbs A-plus list member and you can reserve your tickets weeks in advance.
Yeah, see, that sounds like something I should get involved in.
The thing is, three movies a week and you can reserve the tickets way ahead of time. And yeah, pretty good. And you can link it to your... Okay, now I want to do too much theater math for you. So Fandango allows you to use your AMC Plus membership to purchase tickets and get the same benefits through ordering from Fandango. And if you have an A Plus Stubbs membership, you don't have to pay the fees for Fandango either.
Oh,
and you can use their reward program, which is every four movies you go to through Fandango, you get a free movie ticket. And so it definitely works out good for when you have a family. So every four movies I go to, I have a ticket to take one of my kids or my wife or both of them, and just one of them gets a free ticket. So
so when you go and like, hey, I'm gonna go to the movies, and the little one, he's like, oh, Daddy, can I go? You're like, no, this is movie 3. You can come after movie 4.
And even more ridiculous to break it down. So AMC does this thing where if you you turn in a certain amount of Coke product bottle caps or the insides of the things, you get free popcorn and free soda. And they do it like 5 times a year, something like that. And so you can actually go on eBay and you can buy Coca-Cola bottle caps, and you get like 100 for like
$3. Oh my god, that's so ridiculous!
Oh man, so I'm sitting there inputting all these bottle caps, and you know, yeah.
You're like the Tasmanian devil. Do you remember?
I go to movies a lot.
What is that show? Tasmania. Do you remember that? Like, yeah. Down in Tasmania. There was an episode where he's just like, Taz like bottle cap. I'll never forget it. That is you.
Now, and I got my mother-in-law bringing them to me, too.
With summer movies here, but not because of COVID-19, is it going to be like one movie in the theater playing and it'll just be on 100 screens because they're only allowing like whatever, a small percentage of seats to be sold? So is it going to be 13 shows in the course of their 13 hours that they're open, and each screen is going to be showing the same movie?
I don't think so. I think that we'll definitely see, you know, big blockbusters, like, you know, like when Endgame came out, and it was on, you know, there was 13 theaters, you know, Endgame was on 7 of them. You know, I think for those kind of massive tentpole, so like when Mulan or when Tenet comes out, I could see them for like the first week occupying, you know, half of the screens. But I think there's still movies that were coming out right before, you know, COVID hit. You know, Onward, I know, is on Disney Plus, but movies of that ilk, to where you could screen those in the theater. And I think there's enough people that would go see it, because I think there are people who are just hungering for entertainment and places where they can, you know, they can go and enjoy themselves that isn't in their house. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes. You know, going to the movies is my jam. That's what I like to do in my spare time. When I'm not with my family, and sometimes when I'm with my family, so I'm pumped.
Yeah. I'm gonna go out for cigarettes. I'll be gone 3 hours.
3 hours and 15 minutes. Christopher Nolan doesn't like to edit. I'm gonna be there a long time.
Yeah, we've seen the last couple of Nolan films together.
We'll have to go see Tenet together. You have to get your A Stubbs Plus membership.
Can I steal from your kids and get your free movie?
All right. Done. You can have my next free movie. We'll see Tenet.
Okay, that's fair.
And for the record, I know it's Stubbs A list. Just having fun. I don't want the comments.
Yeah, and also for the record, we're not being sponsored in any way by AMC, even though we've talked them up a whole hell of a lot this episode.
Sounds like
it is an incredible program. It's not MoviePass good, but it's pretty good.
Oh yeah,
well, MoviePass. MoviePass wasn't even MoviePass good by the end.
Yeah, they're stealing people's money. It's terrible. Yeah.
It's all right. I saw 50 movies on their dime, and then when I went to get my refund for my partial refund, they refunded me the whole amount. So, yeah, that's cool.
All right. Well, that's good. Yeah. They had to give you, they stole everyone else's money so you could get your refund.
Yeah. Well, everyone was eligible for a refund. I was just savvy enough to actually ask for it.
Yeah. Are they defunct now? Are they a thing still?
MoviePass is not a thing currently.
That's too bad.
Either is, I can't remember the other one. The only two really we're going right now are AMC A-List and the Regal program. But the Regal program is still kind of confusing.
Sounds confusing.
Yeah, because you can only, like, certain theaters have different tiers. And so you can go to your
subscription. So does the Titanic. There was the rich people.
Exactly. on one tier, you can see
more people.
Yeah, so if you want to see like first run movies, you know, if you don't have the right tier, you still got to pay a couple bucks. And every movie you see, there's like a 50-cent like convenience fee and stuff like that.
Oh, sounds inconvenient.
It's incredibly inconvenient. Because with the Stubbs A-list, you can just, you go to your app, you push the button, and that's all you got to do.
Yeah. Well, if you don't feel like going to the motion picture show, you can definitely check out this new Bruce Lee documentary, 30 for 30 from ESPN. It's called Be Water. And Dave, I know you and your father are pretty big Bruce Lee fans. Have you had a chance to watch it yet?
I have not. We just finished the Michael Jordan thing, The Last Dance, and Be Water and The Lance 30 for 30 are two of my next things that I want to watch. But yeah, Bruce Lee was always a big deal for my father, and you know, he used to always make me watch Bruce Lee movies, and then when I grew up, I'm like, oh, these are actually pretty good. So now I'm making my kids watch them. But yeah, he's just an incredible martial artist. He's an incredible person. You know, now we have a lot of people that spend a lot of time like analyzing what goes in their body and their exercise routines and things like that. And you know, he was doing that in the 70s. You know, he had that worked out. He knew exactly, you know, calories in, pounds out, how much exercise he needed to do. You know, he was the fittest person, you know, on the planet at the time, and you know, arguably ever. And I know you were in the Seattle area for a while, and I knew he was a big deal up there.
I went to his gravesite. And the son's buried right next to him. It's pretty crazy. It's like a shrine, and there's a steady flow of people coming and going constantly to pay their respects.
Very nice. Randy lives by the teachings of Gung Fu, and you can't tell, but he is trained in many martial arts weaponry style, and he's actually doing a kata right now, like Karate Kid 3.
All of this is true.
Yeah.
It's very distracting.
I've never seen any of his material.
Oh, really? There's some really good ones. He beats the shit out of a lot of people. I mean, Enter the Dragon is probably the most famous. Fist of Fury is pretty good, too. But yeah, he kicks some ass. And then Brian, he was in Bruce Lee story. Yeah, I saw that at the drive-in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah. What are you guys using to stream that, or do you have physical media?
I have most of them on DVD, so I don't know what... I'm sure they're streaming somewhere.
The movies? Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I saw them when I was a kid. I was pretty passionate about like Sundays, like Kung Fu cinema kind of thing. It was like in the afternoon. There was nothing on TV. It might have been Saturday, whatever. But there were some pretty interesting movies. And then when Dave and I first met, we had a buddy named Jonathan that was all about freaking Kung Fu movies. And he had this very extensive library of like 400 of them. So... it was sort of like Jonathan's rental house, and you would just go and just get a DVD from him and then just watch them. Some of the ones I remember were like the Fatal Flying Guillotine. That was a pretty fun one. But that wasn't Bruce Lee. That was just, you know, some crazy kung fu movie. But it's pretty crazy.
You can stream Enter the Dragon on HBO Max. And almost all of the rest of his library is streaming on Max Go, which is the streaming service for Cinemax. So I would bet in not terribly far in the future, they will also go to HBO Max probably some rights issue or something like that. But
sure.
Enter the Dragon is on, you know, HBO Max. So you can see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Cool. Yeah, I'll give that a look-see.
Oh, man. Who was that other guy that, like, that trained with Bruce Lee? That old white dude.
Chuck Norris?
No.
Like Steve McQueen trained with him, and he was an old white dude at the time.
No, that... God, fuck me. What the hell is his name?
Google old white dude and see what comes up.
No, hold on. I know who... James Colburn. It was James Colburn. He trained with Bruce Lee. He was like one of his best friends.
Yeah, sad.
Yeah. I was like, because I'm trying to think of like Maverick. I was trying to think of all these Mel Gibson movies that I knew James Colburn was in. And I'm just like, what the shit was that movie?
I would not have gotten off Maverick. He would have been the eighth or ninth person, I guess, from that movie.
I know. Well, he was also in Payback. And that's ultimately what reminded me of.
That's just mean.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, that's just mean. That's him. And it was in the trailer and everything. But if you want to catch the 30 for 30, it is available on ESPN, ESPN Plus, Hulu, and Sling. So definitely check it out. The 30 for 30, the production value is through the roof on those things, and you could really learn a lot. It's 100% an educational experience, to be sure. Especially since, you know, you didn't have access to so much of this material as it was happening.
So it's pretty remarkable when they dig up archive footage and they get so many people involved. They interview a lot of people that were closest to the people that the subject is about. And you get firsthand accounts and stories versus, hand-me-down information. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they got, they have, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was interviewed for it because he was such a big deal. But it's good to see. But, and it looks like they have a ton of archival footage just from all of these great people and stuff like that. So I think it's worth watching. Shannon Lee is in it. That's his daughter. And if you can indulge me for 2 seconds for a fun Shannon Lee story, where Justin and I work, we had sold a Bruce Lee action figure. And it was a big unveil at Comic-Con before either of us started. And our current boss, Adam, did not realize that Bruce Lee's daughter was going to be the one to reveal it. And so they had this huge press unveiling at their booth at San Diego Comic-Con. And they had invited, Shannon Lee to come do the unveiling. And Adam didn't realize that, and he unveiled the figure. And she was just like in the background, all the pictures going like, what's going on? And to this day, he's anytime the name Bruce Lee comes up, he is embarrassed and tells that.
That is pretty terrible.
Sounds like a communication breakdown there.
Yeah.
We flew him out. And at the time, he was working for the department that paid to fly her out and stuff like that. So he just...
That's amazing.
I don't think he ever lived it down. And I'll never let him.
That's okay. Accidents happen. So it makes it fun.
They do.
I like to believe that I would be a good sport if I got flown across the country to be a part of it and then lose out in the closing seconds.
What is think? They paid you out. The trade-off for them flying you out and whining and dining was you had to do this thing you probably didn't want to do. Someone else did it for you.
Right. Exactly. Can't complain. Right.
Sweet. I get all these perks and I don't have to do the thing I didn't want to do. Even better.
Even better. Speaking of not having to do what you're normally meant to do is there's a new Evil Dead movie coming out. Evil Dead Now. It's a sequel written and directed by Lee Cronin. So Sam Raimi and both Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell will not be a part of it. They are going to have some sort of producing credit, I'm sure. But ultimately, it is a passing of the torch. So it's so crazy to think that a franchise that is so knee-deep with Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell to not be part of it is kind of interesting. Of course, it did work with the 2013 reboot of the franchise that Fede Alvarez did with Jane Levy. That movie was incredible. It's one of my favorite horror movies, at least modern-day horror movies. I think that movie just captured all the magic, and it was really cool, really gory, really fun, really scary. Had a blast. I gave it an A- on Geek Legacy. Loved it very, very much. Just incredible. I even talked about it on the Don't Be Crazy podcast. It's just a really good movie. It's a fun franchise to revisit. But I do think that it's interesting that we're not revisiting that character, Jane's character, from the 2013 reboot. We're just going to start all over again with a sequel, as it were, that's passing the torch. And it will, obviously, like they said, have the female lead in it. So it just seems bizarre that they're going that route, especially since Fede Alvarez knocked it out of the park with that reboot.
Yeah, I was going to ask if Fede Alvarez is going to be part of it, but it looks like he is not going to be part of it at all, not even as a producer. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, he's a really cool director, man. He's got a really good eye. Evil Dead was great. Don't Breathe was so much fun. I don't know if you guys saw that where the bad dude from Avatar is like a blind guy. Ike Clanton from fucking Tombstone.
Stephen Lang,
that's his name. Yeah, so that movie's incredible. Also has Jane Levy in it. And then he did the, it's not Dragon Tattoo, it's Spider's Web. Girl in the Spider's Web. He did that movie as well. He's just a really fun director, so... And he's really nice to Geek Legacy. We had the opportunity to interview him. So when you have a positive experience with someone, you just want to support him. So I am a cheerleader for Mr. Alvarez, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm trying to find, did Lee Cronin, has he directed anything before? Oh, here he is.
I feel like he just did something that was, I had it in front of me, but I forget. But I know he had just directed a movie.
He directed recently. A movie called Hole in the Ground.
That's what it was. Hole in the Ground. Very good.
Poster looks terrifying.
Yeah. So. Hmm.
We shall see. Ghost Train.
Ghost Dog.
Ghost Dog. Ghost Dog.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I probably won't see it because I'm a confirmed weenie.
Yeah, a P word, as it were. Yeah. But Randy, he has a newfound love for horror movies. Now, are you gonna check this movie out?
I think I'm gonna have to. Yeah.
Did you watch the series on?
I watched it. I loved it. Yeah. But I mean, it was by no means scary. It was just ridiculous and like buckets of blood and silly, in the best kind of way, you know.
Right.
It was almost satirical of itself, but I loved every second of it.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell is a great guy, dude. He's actually written a couple books. He writes books about like his career and interesting things that have happened. And he doesn't actually do the writing. He talks to a guy over the phone and tells him his stories, then writes the book. It's pretty awesome. He's like, "Hey, dude, check this out," and then he just goes with it.
Sounds like a pretty good way to work.
Yep, he's like, "I got shit to do." It's like dictated by Bruce Campbell.
Well, at that point in time, it's like ghostwriter or whatever, right? Is that what they call that situation?
Sure. Yeah. That stuff's fun, though. I mean, I love hearing stories like that where, you know, these people that are a big part of your movie. I guess part of the magic of the DVD commentary, you know, that's something that's really fun. I was so just not into that for the longest time. And then once you start hearing stories from like Kevin Smith or something like that, or how this joke came about, or the trouble that came into the scene, it looks like the easiest scene in the entire movie, but wouldn't you know it, there's all kinds of chaos going on all around it. And it's fun to hear those stories about how terrible that experience was, that they came out, you know, on the right side of things, but it was definitely trials and tribulations to get there.
There's a lot of great stories like that about because Community is now on Netflix, and so we're kind of watching that in the background. And in the later seasons, you know, Pierce, Chevy Chase's character, it's clear that everyone, from the writers to the actors to the directors to everybody, hates him, and like no one wants to be with him. And so Chevy Chase in that show wasn't always the person on screen. They used a lot of stunt doubles and stuff like that. So anytime Pierce is not speaking, it's not Chevy Chase. It's like a body double. And so there's this whole gag to where they would find new ways for Chevy not to have to come to set. So they would, like, in one episode, he was pretending to be like the Gimp from Pulp Fiction. So he was in like the whole get up for like the whole episode and stuff like that. And it was just fun to someone like cutting them all together, all of the fun ways they did to make sure that Pierce was not in the scene. And so that they didn't have to have Chevy Chase on set.
It's a workaround, see? Yeah,
it's just crazy to hear some of like the horror stories coming from like Dan Harmon and Joel McHale and Alison Brie and Tom Glover.
I think it would be really cool if Netflix had a commentary option, like under the audio settings. That'd be really neat.
Yeah, that's one thing that seems to be missing from streaming platforms over the physical media, because I've always been a big fan of director commentary and, frankly, all the extras. All the behind the scenes material that came with anything ever, pretty much. That was the first thing I would watch. Anytime a new Star Wars movie would come out, it's like, I've already seen the movie in the theater. What I haven't seen are all these cool behind the scenes extras, and I haven't heard the commentary and all that kind of thing. So that was always the first
about thing. Disney Plus has the comment, not the commentary, but has all like the deleted scenes and like the making of featurettes that you would see on the DVD.
Right.
So that's kind of cool, but yeah, I think that it's too expensive to make since now there's no ancillary market for revenue. For, you know, physical media, they're just not creating these monster like box art sets and stuff.
So. Isn't that crazy? You know, there was a time when you walk into a Target and like the entertainment section was rows and rows and rows of movies and books, even books, you know. And now it's like, and CDs. So now there's like an end cap of CDs, a row of books, and maybe two rows of movies.
And it's all music geared towards people over the age of 50.
Right.
People who still buy CDs.
Right. or some sort of, you know, if Taylor Swift has a launch, you know, an album dropping that week, then there's shirts and maybe like some vinyl and then the album. But it's crazy.
Speaking of books, you see the new Hunger Games book came out?
No.
I couldn't remember if either of you read the Hunger Games books.
I read the first book and saw the first three movies. And the third movie, I fell asleep halfway through. And when I woke up, Philip Seymour Hoffman had coked out and died.
In both real life and in the film.
Or was it heroin? Was it heroin? Might have been heroin.
It was heroin, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But the fourth book came out, and I started reading it, and it's an interesting take. It takes place during the 10th Hunger Games, and so the books, the movies that came out with, you know, Katniss Everdeen and The Girl on Fire, those are the 74th and 75th Hunger Games. So this one goes back 64 years, and it follows a young President Snow before he's the president, and he's chosen to be a mentor to one of the combatants in the 10th Hunger Games. And I'm only about a third of the way through, but it's pretty interesting just to see, you know, the effects of the war between the districts that kind of led to the Hunger Games. And I can just see your guys' eyes glassing over. So I'll just say the new Hunger Games book is out. I am enjoying it, and go get it.
It's funny because I'm trying to picture a young Donald Sutherland, and the guy's been old my entire life, so it's hard to do that.
Even like MASH, he's still.
I know. Old. He looks old in MASH too, and that's like 19 whatever, 70 something.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah. They'd probably recast.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. They could do the de-aging.
From like 80 something to 18.
Yeah, easy.
If they can pull that off, they deserve to win every Academy Award ever created, and they should retroactively award them every Academy Award already given out.
Dude, I mean, at the end of the day, they're really onto something because, you know, we had who's the bad guy in Star Wars that's in Rogue One? Tarkin. Yeah. I mean, that's Peter Cushing, right? And mm-hmm. so
right.
long since gone, and now he's starring in a movie. That's just weird.
Well, what made it so accurate, I mean, which isn't detracting from today's modern, like, digital sculptors and artists and that kind of thing that could bring his face back to life from images, but there was an actual cast made of his face from a movie that he had done in the 80s where he needed, like, a prosthetic done. David, do you remember the movie that it is? He has, like, an eyeball, like,
mm-mm.
thing going on. Anyway... they made a life cast of his face, and there was still an archive somewhere that had his actual, like, a plaster casting made from this mold they made of his face. And how cool is that they could actually take the real human, scan that, even though he's been long dead, and then digitally recreate him?
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
It's pretty rad, dude. I'm impressed.
Even someone has had his face in their basement, like, hey, I found this in my basement. I have Peter Cushing's face. You guys want to make a fucking movie?
Let's make a movie. That is crazy, though. I mean, when you think of, like, Forrest Gump, right? How they were able to put Tom Hanks on the sets of variety shows and shake hands with the president. That was all, like, cutting edge. Oh, my God, how did they do this stuff? And this is literally just taking that to the next level. I think that's incredible.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's, like, mid-90s. I mean, that movie came out in... you know, 94. So, I mean, they shot it in, you know, 92, 93. And, you know, Zemeckis is, you know, say what you want about his later films. He's always trying to push that envelope. You know, with Forrest Gump, he did. You know, obviously with Roger Rabbit, the Back to the Future movies, he did.
Yeah. I mean, even Beowulf.
Like, yeah, I was going to say
Beowulf looked like people. I mean, they look like video game people, but there was a certain charm to that. You're like, why are these people so weird and ugly looking? But I kind of like it. It's kind of strange. Like, yeah, that guy looks like Crispin Glover that was in the microwave or something.
Yeah, I mean, even with, like, The Walk, that, you know, he was experimenting with IMAX cameras and stuff like that, you know, just trying to do new things. Yeah, I didn't see that.
That's the one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt where he's walking across the towers?
Yeah, the two towers. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and then,
he's brilliant, man.
Marwinland, the Stephen Carell movie, you know, it's got problems in its portrayal of females in that movie, but... The film itself isn't terribly bad. And
what are you doing?
Welcome to Marwinland. Marwinland? Marwinville? Marwin something? The that. Steve Carell movie where he's like the war veteran who got beat up and like he lives with like his doll. He like recreates like things with like dolls and stuff and he visits them.
Sounds amazing.
Oh, man, it's going to drive me nuts that I got the IMDb's got. I hate their new setup, so. Marwinland, Marwinville. There's definitely a Marwin in there.
It's like Welcome to Marwin or something like that. I don't remember there being a town or a bill or whatever.
maybe that's
Chesterton Townville.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Welcome to Marwin. So I had it. I was just trying to add extra syllables that didn't belong there.
Sure.
But it is. It was a fun film.
Sounds fun. Sounds remarkable.
Cap'n Hoagie.
I don't know about all that.
You know about that. Don't pretend. You love Robert Zemeckis. You like everything. You loved Flight and Contact. You loved all his movies.
Yeah.
Did he do Nightmare Before Christmas? Is that him?
No.
Who did that one?
That was Tim Burton.
No, well, Tim Burton produced it.
Well, who directed it, though?
I nobody who, you know.
Really?
Nightmare Before Christmas. Danny Elfman did
Selleck? Is it Selleck?
That is, yes, Henry Selleck.
Same thing.
And I apologize to all the Henry Selleck fans out there. I'm sure he's done a lot.
Right. He did James and Giant Peach.
He did, and Caroline. He likes to work with those not Tim Burton stop motion animation.
Yeah, that sounds hard. But, you know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? That's another one. Yeah, you mentioned that one earlier. That movie's incredible. Freaking love that movie.
A technical marvel. It's time, that's for sure.
Still stands up. Still Oogle Jessica Rabbit, even though she's not a person. Real
that, would never happen today. You'll never see again a situation with Warner Brothers and Disney characters, animated characters sharing the screen together.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. I love the music too. Like the boom 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 boom. Yeah, it's so cool.
It's such an amazing soundtrack. I love it so much. Again, yeah. One of the very first soundtracks I ever bought. And when I was in film school, I did an animated 1940s like detective noir story. I did claymation for it, and I pilfered the Roger Rabbit soundtrack, and I used that through this animated film, and it was perfect for it. I just love it because it encapsulates kind of like a goofiness of that era that's just so much fun.
Totally. I mean, my Uncle Richard, he had worked on some of the music for one of your first movies, Pink Lemonade, and there was this mischievous sort of Tony sounding song that he had done. It totally reminded me of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I don't remember what it's called.
You know why? It's because we actually, as our temp track for that scene, I know the exact one you're talking about, we actually had Roger Rabbit music in there for the temp track. So he was probably inspired. He was probably inspired by that. Yeah.
It was so cool. In fact, I think I wanted to use it on one of the first podcasts that we ever made too.
There's like this like little bassline like boom kind of thing.
Yeah. It was so very cool. Roger Rabbit. Yeah. God, I wish I had my hands on that. I love this the way that sounded. It sounded so rad.
Need your favorite movie, Used Cars. That's a Zemeckis film. It's good. It's got your boy Zemeckis and your boy Kurt Russell. Double boys.
Anyway. I think that's all I have. Do you guys have anything else to add before we wrap it up?
No.
I think that's it for me. I'm done misremembering for the night.
No other franchise you want to ruin?
No. We're going to have to put like a warning in front of every show. Like, lots of misremembering within. Bear with us.
Yep.
It's like we're retelling history. Like if I ever had kids, which thankfully for the world I'm not going to, but if I did, you know, I would fill them with such misinformation.
Oh, that's the best, dude. I love making shit up so fast. It's like my favorite thing ever. It drives Alex crazy. She's like, our kids are gonna be so stupid. I'm like, no way, dude. They're gonna die on these hills.
Yeah, they're gonna defend that to the end because they heard that from their father. And you know what? Right. Their father was bullshit.
Yep, it's amazing.
We should make that a segment. Every week, one of us does randomly pick a movie, and the other people have to describe what happens in that movie and try to remember it.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good one.
Sounds fun, but it would end up so terribly.
We did something like that before, where I was give you guys clues, like a hot take on it. Like there was one where it was like something about. I remember it was Little Mermaid, but I had said. You know, some fish lady is a bit of a hoarder or something like that. And you guys totally got it. It was great.
I remember that game. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Good time.
They said you always cheated.
Who? Randy?
You did.
Me?
Stupid golden snitches. And...
Oh, yeah.
I think worth 50 points now.
Yeah, because Dave. So here's the thing. It's called handicapping, Dave. They have it. On golf, they have it in bowling. It's just when you're better than people, you gotta be lower. Rather than lower yourself, we elevate your competitors to your level. How about that?
But you should have given them like extra points at the beginning. That's a handicap. Not David goes to commanding lead, and all of those 9 questions meant nothing.
Well, we got
sudden death.
If
If we did it that way, then we're not reinventing the wheel. And I
have a feeling that if had I not been in the lead, the Golden Snitch would not make an appearance in that game.
Well, the Snitch is busy. Busy, busy Snitch. I forgot all about that. All of a sudden, he's getting like 150 points. But I mean, that's Harry Potter logic, too. It's like, dude, why are we wasting all of our time hitting this stupid ball through these hoops when all we got to do is catch this little golden thing?
Why don't we all just try to catch the Snitch?
What the fuck?
I guess in theory, if the other team got to 150 points, they win. So,
is that what it is?
Well, I guess if they got to 160 points, because the Snitch is worth 150 points, so, you know. If you weren't paying attention and they scored 16 unanswered goals on you.
Yeah, that'd be hard. You need a new keeper. Alright, thank you for listening to another episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. It's been a lot of fun. And remember to follow us on the Twitter at Geek Legacy, at Randy Van Dyke, at Snacky_Cakes. And I think that's just about it. You guys have a wonderful week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep rocking and rolling.